We greet each one in Jesus' name this morning as we gather here in the house of God to worship God. Thank you, brother. Back in the summertime, brother John Slaymaker heard me speak in Ohio at a minister's meeting on technology and asked if I would come and share two messages today. And so that's the background of this. I come to you in the weakness of human flesh. I don't know. It's been about 3 weeks ago. I had a bad cold. I don't think it was COVID. I'm sure there's sickness around that's not COVID. I didn't get tested, but it settled in my lungs and gave me a nasty cough that I've been trying to get over, and I was nearly over it, and then we had a little, next tragedy at our house early Friday morning. My VW Jetta diesel parked a foot from my back porch, plugged in so it would start for my daughter in the morning. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, we woke up to the Jetta being on fire and flames shooting out and siding on the house starting to melt. And so I was outside barefooted for way too long with a garden hose and fire extinguishers and till the fire company got there, and all is well. Have to replace some siding, and the car is beyond repair. But I took a lot of nasty smoke into my lungs. So I have a glass of water. I have some cough drops in my pocket, and the grace of God, we're going to attempt to share without getting a coughing fit this morning. I also speak to you from a church perspective of the PMC conference, and we're going to talk about technology, and I'll just tell you what platform we're used to. Maybe some of you know, but I am a user of technology. I have a smartphone in my pocket. The ringer is turned off, but it might buzz today because my name's not Job, but I almost feel like Job. My wife and I left to come here to church this morning, and then one of my daughters called me and said their car left them, said on the way to church. So it's sitting along a highway on 78 off the road. I told them, put a note there with my name and the phone number in case emergency personnel need to know whose is this. They don't panic. They can reach someone. See, we live in a world of technology, and we use it. You know, there was a day when cell phones were new enough that to have a cell phone was either, I remember the first one when I worked for Lee and Hurst Electric. I remember the first one, a bag phone. I think he paid around $1,500 for that. It was in his Honda, and it was hooked to his horn, and it was a mobile office. See, there was a day when it was either business or else it was a luxury. But today, as a father, if I send my daughters off to church without a cell phone, you would almost class me not careful enough, not caring. It's almost, is it dangerous for girls to go out on the road today without a cell phone? See, we've changed, and it's, as people of God, we have to know how to change with it and where the lines and the boundaries are. And so I speak to you from a user's standpoint. I speak to you from a platform where in our conference we ask our members, well, in wrestling with when the internet was coming and all of that, we finally settled on this, I call it a cute little statement. The simple statement in our conference is, no filter, no accountability, no internet. In other words, we ask your people to have filters and some accountability. And it takes various forms and shapes, and there's a number, we don't dictate exactly how that is set up, but those things we ask for in a brotherhood. And so that's the platform I speak to you from, and we want to look at some of these things. This morning's message, I've titled, The Addictive Nature of our electronic devices. I'm not going to tell you this morning that you should not have a smartphone. Now, the title says the addictive nature of electronic devices. The interesting thing about this subject is that manufacturers have rolled so many devices into the smartphone. I used to have a camera, a digital camera, but it was never with me when the best moments happened. But now I have my camera with me. And therefore, I have my photo album with me, too. I can show you pictures of my car and my house, and it's all here. It's in my photo album. It's with me. And I get my email on this thing, a trooper could call me to ask about this car, so it's my phone, and it's all in one. And it's fairly convenient. In fact, when I got my first computer, because I was assistant editor of the Pilgrim Witness, that first computer cost me about $2,000, and it was way less capable. The speed and power of that was way less than this thing, and its storage capacity was way less. And that was my first computer. Things have changed, and you and I know that very well. And so the addictive nature of electronic devices, and particularly the smartphone, because that's where everything is going. So we'll talk about that. Now, I have a question for you this morning. How many of you ever have felt lost when you couldn't find your phone? Can you be honest with me? Don't know where your phone's at? Some time ago, I left my house to drive to Blue Ridge for a men's meeting. And halfway there, I realized, I don't have my phone. It's laying at home on my dresser. Now, Blue Ridge, there's a number of brethren there that like to visit with me on my way home to keep me awake. And we don't have to visit so long after church. Some of them will call. One or two of them will call me. So I had to tell them. I said, look, don't try to call me tonight as I leave this men's meeting, because I don't have my phone with me. I don't want anybody assuming that I'm mad, but I won't answer my phone tonight. So I had to make an announcement what they'll find if they try to call me, because I'm so used to my phone and so are they. And see, there's a good way to use a phone. You can call a man while he's driving, and you can encourage him. But one of the things that I notice is that restless hearts latch on to things that promise to fulfill and satisfy. Restless hearts latch on to that. Now, that was a wonderful lesson this morning. And I'd just like to take one piece of that lesson. You know, there are people today who would rather have the hard-boiled egg, because it is immediate satisfaction right now. I love hard-boiled eggs. A little salt and hard-boiled egg. When I'm going home at night after a meeting, if it's not Sunday night, and I'm a little hungry, I used to love McDonald's French fries. I still do, but I have learned there's some better things in life. And one of the things, if I stop at a Sheetz, one of the things I love is a little two-pack of hard-boiled eggs or red beet eggs and a little bit of salt. And just stick with that protein and not so much sugar, and I'm good to go. Some people would rather have that hard-boiled egg because it's gratification right now. It's food. And there's not much beyond. And that's a sign of a restless heart. I want something now. And the electronics promise to give you something right now that you can latch on to. And because of that, we can get addicted to those things. And I want to talk a little bit about this. I'm going to read some things to you from some research. I'll read some things to you from some people who have studied this. Now, these are not Mennonites. These are not Christians. This is people of the world writing about this, about the addictive nature of electronic devices. So the first one comes from an article from Stanford University. Dr. Twenge said that she first spotted some odd trends in teenage mental health in around 2011, 2012, when smartphones were becoming common among teens. There was a doubling in suicide rate and a tripling in emergency room admissions of self-harm among young girls particularly. And there was a 50% increase in clinical depression rate. And she goes on in this article to say that there's undeniable proof that screen time has a negative effect on developing minds of adolescents from about the time of puberty to young adulthood, in that those teenage years. And she goes on to say that part of that is because of the in teen years, there's so much focus on social acceptance and understanding friends, and how that's one of the high things that youth are sorting through. It's important to us older people too, but we've gotten some other values in life, and so maybe peer pressure takes some other forms, let's say it that way. But in teenage years, it's friends. In fact, she ends by saying that research does show, listen to me, that screen time leads to unhappiness rather than the other way around. Now, one of the things that has happened to me through COVID, I've gotten this, it's kind of a bad thing, but I've gotten this aversion to believe anything that I hear. Almost everything you say, are you sure? So one time they told us this, well, now they tell us that. And after a while, well, I don't want to hear any of it, because just give it a month and it'll be the exact opposite and it'll be something high up. So on this subject about the addictive nature and what some of what I just read you, then I said to myself, all right, so what's the other side? Where can I find the article says that that's not true? It doesn't addict. It's okay. Teenagers can handle it. You know what? You can't find it. And that scares me. I couldn't find it. If you can, I would love to. You just share that with me. Well, she says that the way we absorb the cool blue glow of a screen is akin to the electricity a drug user may feel. The way our bodies are made up is amazing. So I can't tell you, I can't explain to you what happened to me at 2:30 Friday morning when my wife said, the jet is on fire. It was right outside my bedroom window. When I leapt out of bed and I saw the flames above the hood, I panicked. I didn't even know I didn't have shoes on until later. And after it was all over and it was out, I couldn't go back to sleep. So I sat down in the recliner chair, and it took about an hour until I started feeling this terrible pain in my knee and my ankle. I don't know what I did to this leg, but I couldn't feel it. Okay? So our bodies have a system of pumping chemicals into our blood to help us to do what we need. And one of those things is dopamine. Dopamine is what's released into our blood. That's a happy hormone. That's a happy, I don't know if you call it a chemical. I'm not a scientist nor a biologist. But so when Johnny does his chores and he comes in and mother says, thank you, Johnny. You went over and beyond. And she strokes his head and says, thank you, Johnny. I appreciate when you do this. Dopamine is released into his blood. It's the happy feeling. And it's the inspiration to do more. Every time that you smile at your children, there's a measure of dopamine. It's the way the body is designed. There's this happiness, and it brings rest in the heart. And so smartphones, screens light up the same area of the brain as opioids and cannabis. And the reward pathways mediated by dopamine respond to screens in a very similar way to opioids. And so there's this happy rush that we get with our screens. The New York Post, in a 2016 article, calls it digital heroin, how screens turn children into psychotic junkies. And this is what they say: there's a reason that most tech-cautious parents are tech designers. Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple, was a notoriously low-tech parent. He would not let his young children have the very devices that he designed, because he knew what he designed them to do. Silicon Valley tech executives and engineers enroll their children in no-tech Waldorf schools. Google founders Sergey Brin and Larry Page went to no-tech Montessori schools, as did Amazon creator Jeff Bezos and Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales. I can't prove that. That's what's written. Why do they avoid it? Why do they go to non-tech? Because they understand the background. And so some would call it electronic cocaine or digital heroin. So there's another article in Explore Health magazine. I'm not sure what year, but the title was Seven Scary Things You Never Knew About Your Cell Phone. And I'm going to just read some things to you. Do you feel like you can't concentrate anymore? Has your ability to remember things you've read gotten dramatically worse since you started doing the most of your reading online? It's not your imagination. According to Price, when we read digital media, the cluttered landscape of links and ads and short bursts of attention that are required by scrolling and swiping and tweeting result in a contradiction of terms. And this is what it results in. It results in intensely focused distraction. Imagine that. Intensely focused distraction. Glued to the screen, flip here, there, here, there, here, there. And it does something to our brain. It can do something. And while that distraction seems like it is, should be temporary, its effects are actually chillingly long-term. This type of frequent, focused distraction, she explains, isn't just capable of creating long-lasting changes in our brains, it is particularly good at doing so. And so, where do you turn when you want to sort something out in life? Where do you turn when you got some questions? I have some animals, and I had a goat get sick on me. And, you know, I went to Google, and I went, so to sort out life, we go to the thing that does this to us. Isn't that strange? There's probably some old vet somewhere who could have helped me fix that goat's problem, but I would have had to pay for it. And this, the goat got better from the stuff that I did to it that I learned on the web. All right, so this writer goes on to point out something else. And she says that, she raises this question, why are social media apps free? Why are so many apps free? Somebody designed them. And why are they free? That should be a warning flag. And I want to just draw a little picture for you here. So, and we'll just use a simple thing like, let me do it right here. So here am I, and because I have a little bit of farmer blood in me, I purchase Lancaster Farming. I decide, I want that paper. There's enough in there, there's some value for me. So I buy Lancaster Farming. So I am the master who chose to bring Lancaster Farming in because I like what's there. And I kind of think that it is my servant. Now, it's a temptation Sunday afternoon to read Lancaster Farming. But I can lay Lancaster Farming aside. I have control of Lancaster Farming. But what I want to tell you today is Lancaster Farming does not keep on, and the business behind that does not keep on just because I purchased Lancaster Farming. So I work at Jonestown Ag Supply in the store, and we have things to sell. This time of the year, I would like to sell heaters. We got all kinds of propane heaters and electric heaters and some expensive ones and some cheap ones. And so every week, a salesman from Lancaster Farming walks into Jonestown Ag Supply and talks to me about what kind of ad would you like to put in Lancaster Farming. And we talk about it. We design a heater ad, and it goes in Lancaster Farming. And I pay a lot of money for that ad. I don't own the business, but I take care of the ads. And so I have a budget, and it's hundreds of dollars depending on the size of the ad. So we purchase an ad, right? But what did we really buy? When we buy that ad, what are we buying? You know what we want? We want you to see that ad. I want you to come through the door. I want you to know that we sell heaters. I want you to see the sale. So now suddenly this turns on me, because while I thought I was the master of Lancaster farming, I bought something that allows Jonestown Ag to influence me. Now, Lancaster farming isn't free, but when you think about cell phone apps, part of the reason that they're free is because somewhere there's a purchaser who is purchasing. What are they purchasing? Your attention. Huh. Are you willing to give your attention, even if it's free? Are you willing to, this intensely focused distraction, how many things are you willing to give your attention to for their agenda? Our lives and what we do with them must be under the control of Jesus Christ. If we're not careful, we can give our attention, our allegiance, our time, our life somewhere else. And so, well, another article says that smartphones designed to be addictive? To conclude, yes, smartphones may have been designed to be addictive. This all depends on how you use them, the kind of apps you install on them. The application creators have mastered various tricks and techniques to keep some phone users glued to their screens day and night. For instance, all these actions that get rewarded for using these applications. However, this is not a Mennonite bishop writing this. This is just from an article. However, the possible solution to this practicing, to stay away from your phone, and probably the solution to this is practicing to stay away from your phone and probably getting rid of certain apps that are needed in this day and era, the sacrifice may be worth it. Their conclusion is that take control, back away, decide what you really have to have, and master it. Doesn't that sound like something that people of God should do? To the Lordship of Jesus Christ, it should be weighed by scriptural principles, and we should be able to find our way. How much and in what ways can we use them? Actually, this smartphone and the use of smartphones has created some new terms. There's a term called nomophobia, and that's the fear of going without your cell phone. There's a term called textophrenia, and that's the fear that you can't send or receive texts. And there's phantom vibrations. I'm not going to ask you how many you reached to your pocket because you thought your phone was ringing and it wasn't. It has happened to me. Well, phone addiction. This I got off the web, probably using my phone to access this article. Some of the telltale signs of phone addiction is when you reach for your phone the moment you're alone or bored, phone comes out. Or you wake up multiple times at night to check your phone. So after the fire Friday morning, I put a picture on my status early in the morning, and then I did something. I watched who sees my status at 3:45. A few mothers saw it. I assume they were up with their baby and checked their phone. So you can give away yourself. Like, people can tell whether you're awake. There's ways. You feel anxious or upset or short-tempered when you can't get to your phone. You might be addicted. Your phone use has caused you to have an accident or injury. You're spending more and more time using your phone. Or your phone use interferes with your job performance, your schoolwork, or your relationships. You might be addicted if people in your life are concerned about your phone use patterns. Or when you try to limit your use, you relapse quickly. You might be addicted. Or this one. And this one I share from my own heart's experience. You are known to use your phone while someone is talking to you. I have a terrible bad habit. Come home in the evening and my wife has a day's worth of things to talk about and unwind, and she hasn't seen the people that I have. And I was at the store, I'm all peopled out and I'm tired of people. I can get there. And there I sit on the sofa and I'm scrolling through some news articles, right? And she's talking to me and I'm just scrolling. I am listening. I am capable of multitasking. Though I'm not a woman, I can. But what a message. Why don't you look at her in her face? I like to sit at a restaurant sometimes and look around and see what's happening. It's disgusting how many times a man and a woman, I don't know if they're dating or married or whatever, look like they're out for an evening and they're both on their cell phones. Why did you go out for an evening together if you're going to both be in your own world? Well, I'd like to take you to a scripture next, and then we'd like to talk about some of the practical things, reasons why that make a smartphone so addictive. And then that'll help us to know maybe some things that we can subdue or cut out to avoid this addiction. But so this morning's message doesn't have as much scripture in as this afternoon's will, and I somewhat apologize for that. But this morning's message is to just help us get a grip on the seriousness of getting addicted to it. And so I raise this question, does it really matter? Or why does it matter? Go with me to Exodus chapter 32. Exodus 32 is a story that you might say, well, how does that relate to technology? So Exodus 32 is about idolatry. And it's idolatry that's referred to in the New Testament. Look, pointed back to a time of idolatry, an event, a place where God's people bowed down to golden calf. So, I'm not going to read these verses, but it starts out with Aaron. They saw that Moses isn't coming down. And when they're ready to go into idol worship, what is the first thing that Aaron asked for? And you find it there in about verse 2 or 3. What did Aaron say first of all? Give me your gold. Okay? Money. Idolatry asks for your gold. What did it ask for next? After the calf is made, and then he said, he told them what? What did it ask for next? Worship. Okay? I'm going to write this just a little different. He said, let's take a day. You know, an image of gold sitting in your back, it's not worth much until you get your friends around to rejoice in this. Let's take a day. You don't buy a big bass boat and deck it all out and set it in your garage. As soon as you buy a bass boat, you got to go fishing. I didn't say a bass boat is an idol, but it might be. Idol. It asked for their gold. It asked for their time. And then when they got together, what was it? What were they doing? What was going on? Festivity, fun, looseness. And it seemed like there was no edge. It's party time. Listen, you look around today, something that claims gold and time and involves play, party, festivity, you might have found an idol. Now think about people's smartphones. Electronics. Costs a lot of money to buy some of them. Now they're cheaper today than they were when they first came out and all that. And you can buy them on eBay. You can get around the gold maybe. But it takes time. How much time do you spend on that phone? And how much play and fun and party circles around that? Be careful. It may become an... And how does God look at idolatry? You know, one of the things about electronics and about a smartphone is it tries to replicate God. Okay? This thing, because of the web and everything, almost seems like it is all-knowing. It is almost everywhere present. I mean, you can know about what happened at the synagogue in Texas last night or yesterday. See, I checked my news. It's just about everywhere present. I had some friends in Alberta, and I can go to the weather thing, and I can check the weather in Alberta quickly. It's seems almost everywhere present. It seems almighty because it can do so many things. Well, listen, God wants control of our lives. So God wants us to understand who He is. And here is me and you. And He wants this relationship. He wants a consuming, reciprocating relationship. That's why He allows persecutions. That's why He allows cars to let them sit along the highway. He wants activity in our lives. He wants us to trust Him. And then there's a world over here. And let's just call it WWW. And the world wants this thing going on too. Now, is it wrong to find out what battery will fit that car that's sitting out along the highway from? No, I checked that on the way here because my son-in-law said, well, I'll just take a battery out and put it in. I think that's what's wrong with the car. That's pretty simple along the highway. And so I went to the world for a bit of knowledge. But God says, God does not want that to steal our, that's idolatry. And that is at the foundation of this. That is the depth of the burden this morning as we talk about the addictive nature. Because this would love to take the place of God, and that's an idol. Now, what makes the smartphone or electronics so addictive? Let's talk about some of the specifics and get down to some of the... As we do this, I do it to help us to understand that there are some things that you can turn off or avoid to push back against the pull for addiction. One of the things that makes a phone so addictive is push notifications. The buzz, the bell, the beep when something comes in. A newsfeed notification, a buzz when somebody sends a text or somebody's WhatsApp. And so this thing buzzes and there's something there. What does your mind do with that? So you're working. I'm at Jonestown Ag and I'm helping a customer. And this thing buzzes. Which is more important, my little newsfeed thing? Or doing my job careful. And that's somewhat of a non-spiritual issue. I guess it becomes a spiritual issue when you defraud your boss by spending time on that. But what about when I'm having devotions and I'm reading the Bible and praying and my phone buzzes? You see, that they're geared to get your attention. You can turn those things off. You can turn off notifications. You can set up a life saying, look, I'm not going to check it until I get to lunchtime, then I'll check it. You know, actually, in my work, I am at a place where there is a phone number that rings a line that someone actually answers, and you can ask to speak to Luke Benich. And so I can actually leave my phone laying, and my wife can get a hold of me and others if they have to. If someone's dying, they can. They still can. But we want our phone on and on us for, you know. All right, so another thing that... makes the phone so addictive is the excitement of return comments. I don't need to tell you, if you're someone who texts and you have friends and you like to joke around and you like to, you know, find a quip that makes people smile, all godly but, you know, funny, and you send something through, you get a little bit of a rush thinking about what the person is thinking on the other end. And in your mind, you play this. I wonder how that hit him. Okay? And you're waiting for that return. And that can really get you. There's something there. It's the same thing that's here this morning. As I preach and I look into your face and I see a smile and I see you nodding. It's a feedback saying, I'm with you. You got it, brother. It's truth. Okay? That feedback is not wrong. That feedback we count on in life. But it's especially addictive when you can lob a comment in on somebody and you wonder, what are they thinking? And then they come back with that whatever, and it just, there it is. Yep, and I knew that would make him smile. I knew that would make their day. And so with this smartphone comes a, what I call a distant closeness. It's kind of weird. It's a little bit like this focused distraction, because they're pretty far away. And you can actually sometimes feel okay saying something, texting something that you wouldn't say to their face. Either something nasty or something, you know, young people sometimes, or old adults as well, can, you know, if they're get into something smutty, something, you know, I never say that to their face, but, you know, there's this distant closeness sometimes that can set up, and there's a pull of this excitement of return comments and what will come back, and then there's almost a little bit of a challenge set up to maybe come back with something better. Or your friend that you send this cute little quip, then they come up with one and they got to send that one back to you, and soon this thing gets to be a cycle that you've got to keep up. Another thing that makes smartphones and electronics so addictive is what I'm going to call friend following. Knowing every day, every hour, what my friends are doing and where they're at. And posting my latest status can be part of that, revealing all of my, you know, a lot of my personal life. One of the things that really causes me pause is when my wife and I got married, we didn't have a smartphone. We actually went on a honeymoon to Florida, and we only could use phones along the way at the motel and stuff. We actually existed, had a happy honeymoon, and you know what? Half the world didn't know where we were. We were not posting statuses of me and her and how, you know, how much we love each other. You know, I don't get it. When a couple goes off, if I were to actually go find the motel they're at and say, I just want to say hi to you, they would feel I was intruding. But they'll take a picture of themselves and put it out for everybody to see. I saw this happen at work. Young man I work with, it's hunting season. He used to like hunting a lot better than he does now. And deer hunting. So he's at work. And it's one of these days like this whenever the weather's fixing to change and deer apparently move just ahead of a storm. So there he is at work. He's on to work, and we're counting on him. And two of his friends are sitting in the woods, and they're texting him about how much the animals are moving and the potential. And he can't hardly stay at work because up to the minute when I went deer hunting as a young fella, we would go do it Monday night or Tuesday night or take a day off or whatever. And we would maybe come to church Sunday morning. I don't know if that's even a right thing to talk about Sunday morning, but we did. And we would talk about, oh, yeah, you were out. Tuesday night was a good night. Oh, you know. We didn't know by the minute when the animals were moving best, but today you can. And there's a fierce pressure. Oh, I should be. And finally he said, hey, can I take off early? This is the night to be in the woods. And guess what? He didn't see a thing. That's part of the reason why they're addictive. It's because that kind of stuff is going on. Another reason they're addictive is the escape from present reality. The escape from present reality. I had a young person tell me straight up that he was a young person who was walking away from the faith and had already done some things, had already alienated himself from his family. And as he would come back to a family gathering or something of a larger family, like he tried to come back, but he told me, he said, you know what? He said, when I go to those gatherings, I escape with my phone. In other words, and we saw that, he would sit there texting his friends. He was uncomfortable here in this gathering, but there he was with his friends. And it gave him a way while he was there, because it's, you know, he really should have been there, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't having social exchange with us. He was on his phone. And so there can be some escape from a present reality. A way to zone out, maybe gaming away while family and friends are neglected. Another reason that cell phones are addictive is because of the memory treasure house. So I'm a grandpa with 7 grandchildren, and I have pictures of them on there, and they're precious. And I can. So if you see me looking at my phone, don't assume I'm just surfing the web. Assume I'm looking at my grandchildren, and I'm enjoying. It's all part of it. Here it is. Pictures that capture the best moments, and they're not wrong. We had books in our house still. Now we have them on our phones. Now we have them electronically. Sometimes we print them off or get books made with them in. But it's a memory treasure house. Another reason that smartphones are addictive is the fascination of the world of YouTube and movie addiction. This is a hard one to talk about because, for example, COVID shut down our chorus from going into old people's homes. So our chorus decided they're going to have a program. They're going to live stream it so that the people in the old people's home can hear it. And many were blessed. And now it is on YouTube, and they listen to it over and over again, and they can actually physically see it. And you have to say there can't be wrong. But my, you know what all is on YouTube? And you know how many of us waste time on YouTube? Oh, I needed to repair a vehicle the other day, and because I drive junk, I usually try to take care of my own vehicles and escape the garage bill. And so I needed to know something, so I went and I found a YouTube video, and it 7 minutes told me how to do this, and it saved a lot of time. I knew right where to go to do. What's wrong with that? Okay? But then there's the funny videos, and then there's the most embarrassing moment videos, and then there's the dumb driver videos, and then there's the stupid woman videos, and there's on and on. So where does the child of God, you know, it takes a lot of wisdom. Okay, we can use it for chorus. I'm going to get some tutorial help for fixing something. But how much of my heart will I give to the funnies? And how far will I go with that? And you know what? When you get to this festivity, you can watch the children of Israel going farther and farther and farther, and they went right into immorality. So much of festivity, so much of phones. Oh, there's clean fun, and it becomes a little dirtier and a little dirtier, and soon, where's the edge? It seems like there is no edge. So this fascinating world of YouTube, and you know, so this kind of thing, drawing on a board this morning, captures your attention and helps you focus and helps you learn something. But if I could make this move, well, that's the reason I'm moving. If I could make this move, it would burn in it harder yet. And the memory of those things will stick longer. Another reason that smartphones are addictive is gaming apps. The contest of which you can be part of a gaming thing, certain things, and you could actually be part of, I don't know how all this works, but I'm told that, you know, there's people who will compete on these things around the world. I want to tell you a little story. We have a young man who works for us in our garage. And apparently, he had been a gamer. And when he came to work for us, he had some struggles in focusing and doing his job. Today, he is much better. The main thing that has changed, well, he's learned a lot, but the main thing has changed is he has put gaming aside. I have seen this in more than one person who was spending a lot of time on gaming. It actually messes with the mind and messes with some things that are necessary for actual normal labor and life and interaction. And I don't understand it, but I have seen it. And I've heard testimonies of that. And so gaming apps can be so addictive. Another thing that's so addictive is the music streaming. You can stream music. Well, you can go on CloudVale and you can get some hymns that folks post there. You can be part of Sim Yoder's WhatsApp group. There's good songs there. But then you can subscribe to, let me just call it, the World's Pit. There's a few hymns in the World's Pit. And I'm not saying it's wrong to pick those, you know, to have access to those hymns. But isn't there a potential for danger? What is God, what does God think of me? So what percentage of songs from those streaming apps are God honoring? Well, if we're going to use them, we're going to have some kind of way of pulling only the good to a list that plays, and not just doing a random thing that anything comes in to listen to. And we really should answer the question, how does God feel when I have to go to the world's cesspool, I guess that's what you could call it, to find some good? Oh, I only go for the good, but I go right there to Sodom to get it. Something we need to think about. But there's so much there, and there's so, and you know, it's my taste, and so you go from one, can go from one thing to the next. And well, iTunes or Spotify, you can subscribe to it, you can pull that stuff in. But where will it lead us? Number 9, another reason that cell phones are so addictive is the exploration of a never-ending world of so-called facts. You can go and you can search and you can search and find answers to almost anything. It used to be where I work, someone would come in and say, hey, I have a Simplicity riding mower, a number XYZ123, and I need a belt for the deck. And I would say, I don't have a way of looking up a Simplicity mower. I can't say that anymore. All I got to do is Google it. And in fact, Amazon probably offers the belt. And you can pull it up and it says it's a half-inch belt, 96 inches long. And I have one of those. It's there. You know that. This is 2022. And so that can have an addictive pull on us, because you can get almost anything there, from wonderful recipes to... there's just, you can ask Google anything, and it seems like it has an answer. You can get ideas for the yard and home decor. You can go to Pinterest. I noticed some decorations changing in our weddings, I think, because there's all kinds of options. There's pretty neat things. You know what? I got some good ideas off the web of how to use pallets to do a bunch of things in my shop and my barn. Junk pallets, cheap. You see what we're talking about this morning? There's so many things that are good and okay, but then it's so fascinating, and you can spend so much time. There's just almost no limit to what all you can find. And see, when I started teaching school, a wise old man told me, he said, now as a teacher, when you pick up an encyclopedia and you want to look up something, you know what the term is, the word you're looking for, you pick it up and you thumb back through and you find right where it is and you open it up and then you read. Because he said when a teacher opens an encyclopedia and turns back through, oh, that's fascinating. And he gets, there's something there about that. You know what he's talking about? Even before smartphones, we had this challenge of this world of facts at our fingertips. Someone recently in a message, and I didn't jot it down, but they recently talked about way back in the early day that the library at Alexandria, Egypt, prided themselves in having all of the books of the then known world, all of the printed knowledge of the then known world. And someone had a comparison of how many times more we have today at our fingertips with the internet. And that library at Alexandria that was the powerhouse of knowledge of the world looks puny today. And that can be addicting, especially for people who like facts and want to know. And a lot of those facts aren't wrong. And you know that. Well, I once read an article about college students today coming out of college. They think they have the world mastered. They think they are prepared. They think they have a life ahead of them because they have Google. In fact, you don't hardly need a textbook with Google. I remember, well, let me finish this point. They have Google, and they have all that information so they can know anything, anywhere, anytime. And they have a huge friends following. And so they have this social media where they got lots of friends, and they think they're ready to lead the world. And you know what? They get out, and the cold reality that they learn is it is hard to turn Google knowledge and friend following into cash that you need to live. They thought they were prepared, and it is hard. Now, Google can help us and friends, but you can't make a living on Google and a friend following. And you and I know what it takes to make a living. And sometimes it takes some hard work. Some people are in tech and programming computers, and I'm not bashing that. But you understand, it's something about work. It's something about putting this stuff to use. I was going to tell you a little story. I taught school for many years, 14 years to be exact. And so I taught the 8th graders ratios. So if you have an engine and a certain size pulley and you're driving a pump, you want the pump to run so many RPMs, you can use ratios and you can figure out what size pulley you need on the engine and what size pulley you need on the pump. So school was over. In summertime, I went to work at Jonestown Ag in the shop. And there was the owner's son who had just come through 8th grade, and I had taught him ratios. And there we were building a spray truck, and they needed to figure out the size of the pulley on the motor and the size of the pulley on the pump. And I said, Jeremy, we just learned that. You know how to do that? Oh, yeah. So I took a piece of cardboard. I said, remember, ratio, whatever. And an older man with a smirk on his face. There's an app, there's a web page here that you can just type the information in and it tells you this, you know, if you whatever you know, it put in the information you want and it'll do the other calculation for you. And he had it calculated before we had the ratio done. And I was upset because no longer do I need to teach 8th graders how to do ratios because it's right there. Or do we? Then at one point I met someone who said, ratio, I don't know what a ratio is. What? How would you figure out? They didn't even know that ratio is the term. So you do need to teach ratios so you know where to go and what thing to put on. But you don't have to know how to do ratios. You only need to know the terms to get there to let Google do it for you. And that's addictive. Well, I hope this has done something in our heart to say, you know, I wasn't thinking about this in this way. I need to think about the impact. The question that I come to in closing is, what is the spiritual impact that our electronic devices are having on our hearts? What spiritual impact? Now, I see something happening in our church group, and I suspect it's happening with other Christian brothers and sisters. So I am just a little over 50 years old. So I, as an ordained man, was part of the early discussions of what are we going to do with the internet? What are we going to do with phones? Do we need to do something? Do we need to make a rule, or do we just let it to people? And those wrestlings of heart. Every church tries. So what are we going to do? How do we help our fathers and all that? And you know what I notice? Almost every church group, regardless where they draw the line, continues to wrestle with the question, is it safe? If you say none, if you say some but filtered, Is it safe? We all care about the safety, especially of our young ones coming up through, but all of our hearts. Is it safe? And so I was part of that era, and I don't know that we got it right. We tried by the grace of God to find our way through that. But we have a generation coming along. A generation now, there's a few ordained men who were young fellows who had phones maybe a little too soon in their pockets. And I hear some of those fathers saying, well, you know what? For my family, for my children, and they're starting to talk about some lines, some things that they would like to do and spare their children from. And I am a firm believer that we elderly must have brotherhood with the young ones. It is not just lock it here the way it looked to me at 50 years old, and that's all we're going to do. We need brotherhood. We need fathers and leaders who are wrestling with the question, what is this doing to my heart? What is it doing to your heart? Where should we be? And whether you want to talk about that just personally, let each one do that, or whether you want some kind of collective agreements on it, whatever level you do, I believe every brotherhood needs to wrestle with the question, so what is happening in our hearts? Because if we don't, Satan wants to take our hearts, and he might get it done through technology. And you know what? Looking back, if the Lord tarries, which I hardly see how he can with all the wickedness in the world, all the signs, but if he tarries another 50 years, and we look back, generation looks back and says, evaluates what we did in finding our way through this, what will they say? How safe will it look to them? You know, that's really where time is a great revealer of what the choices I made today, what impact it had on me for eternity. May the Lord bless and direct.